dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportZone.com. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to SVC Sports Talk. You're listening to show 298 within our 10th season of doing this here podcast. It's brought to us by SVCSportZone.com. My name is Bruce Knox, and I'd like to welcome in the two gentlemen who do most of the talking and have all the brains. First, we say hello to John Bruce. Mr. Bruce, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Great. How are you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing very well as well. I guess that sounds right. Do you have a good break?
It's been pretty good. Just trying to stay healthy and sleep. And I've been doing a lot of sleeping. So that's, I've been pretty good.
All right. Well, a little basketball, I'm sure, sprinkled in there as well. We'll talk more about that. Mm-hmm. And then let's welcome in Mr. Combs. How are you, Shane?
Oh, doing super. Getting my last meal, so to speak, ready after our recording here tonight. Some mac and cheese with some wiener dogs cut up in. And then tomorrow I go hardcore diet as I gotta get on it here and get back on track. I've always said I don't mind in my older days moving from wide receiver to tight end there if the coach thinks my weight's getting out of control. But anytime he starts moving me to tackle, I probably need to get on the diet there and scale it back a bit.
Well, I think we've been through this year of COVID or whatever we've been through, and I think everybody's put on some weight. And if you're like me, you know, you were going to do something about it come summer, and summer came and went, and fall turned into winter, and we just picked up where we left off in the spring, if you're like me. So, yeah, I certainly understand that, and I thought I was going to be very active come the new year. So, first day I didn't. If you have an Apple Watch, you'll know what I'm talking about. You make that tracks your activity. And let's just say that my rings did not get satisfied and have not been satisfied in exercise or activity so far. So, hopefully we'll get there. Shane, I'm glad to hear that you're on that kick as well. And we want to move you back out there to tight end at least, if not onto the wide receiver spot, so to speak.
Correct.
Well, guys, we are in the new year. Welcome to everybody to 2021. And we thought we'd kind of open this show with a new year thought from both of you guys. So I just kind of want you to dig deep within your soul and come up with a new year thought. And John, I'm going to ladle you with a thought for the girls. So what's your thought when it comes to SEC girls sports for the new year?
I just kind of went with basketball in this. I was just, just balanced.
Sure. Okay. Balanced.
Yeah. I say a balanced league should see a stellar 2021 portion of this season and beyond. I think Adina has kind of put themselves out in front by playing really well, but man, the league's 19-13 out of the conference, which is pretty solid. I know we took a couple licks over the break from the SHAC. I'm used to the SHL. It changed 10 years ago, but I'm still getting used to it. We took some licks there, so we're not where we want to be as a league as a whole. But, man, there's some really good basketball being played. I think we'll be there pretty soon. Shane probably won't want to talk about it because it's his team, but I watched Paint Valley a couple times over break, and it was night and day between the two games. And, just they went from hurting themselves the first game to, yesterday, since mm-hmm. we're on Sunday. Yesterday, I watched them knock off a really good Southeastern team, and they were locked in the entire game, and you could just see that's a team that has one senior, mm-hmm. and that's a team that's going to be pushing for that league title next year and beyond. And I really like what they're doing out there. Unioda's playing better than I expected. Southeastern, like I mentioned, is good. Adina's really good. Zane Trace keeps getting better. Piketon's going to be really good, if not the second half of this year, but the next couple of years as well. Westfall's a quality program at this point, and and then Huntington. You have Basie, but you're also getting some scoring from different places. So I think the second half of the league season is going to be really fun to watch every night, because I think we've talked about it before, but I think the league is very balanced and shouldn't see many blowouts, and we'll see a lot of competitive games.
All right, Shane, while we've got the chance here, why don't you give us a New Year's thought for the boys' side, if you will?
I just think it's much more top heavy than I thought. Okay. I mean, I was pretty certain it was going to be, but just watching Unioda and Adina the other night, it was hard not to just watch it as a fan and as a coach and watch the probably 10 to 11 minute spurt of defense that Unioda put on there throughout that second quarter in particular, and then how Adina answered with defense, creating some opportunities to do the same in return. And then what do you have? You get down to crunch time, it's a 1-point game. It's just kind of what we thought it would be. It was just a great, great basketball game. And as I watched those two play in a lot of different matchups and watched them play each other, it's just hard to not feel like they separate themselves from other teams. Now, in fairness to Piketon, they went through a lot of situations early in the year, and they've really, really started to play well, and then they had an opponent go mm-hmm. through it. So, I think Piketon's best basketball is ahead of them. I think they're really good. Chandler mm-hmm. has just been incredible. He's put up about a three-game run here, and he had, 20 points the first quarter the other night. He's been terrific. So, I don't – maybe it's a little unfair to just completely shut Piketon out of that, but Zane Trace, it started to be better, and I thought some of those teams there throughout were going to be up and down in certain matchups, and I guess, John, that's been true. Mm-hmm. 4 through 5 through 8 would be the better way to say it. I really had a chance over the break here to watch Huntington and Southeastern and Westfall play just a little bit more. Huntington obviously going through some growing pains, but I watched them go on the road to Circleville and get a real nice win. And then, Southeastern, I think someone told me that they've only been in the gym like 5 or 6 times out of the last 25 days or something like that. So I don't know if that's completely accurate, but I think it's pretty close. I'll be honest. I was pretty impressed. I was pretty impressed with just their talent level. Because that's really what you're mm-hmm. gauging when you watch them play coming off of a 10-day break yeah. with one practice mm-hmm. and I watched them play. So really what I'm watching there is just their talent level, because you're not going to have any rhythm. And I was very, very impressed with that. So then same way with Westfall, I watched them show a little bit of offensive talent when I watched them against Benton County. But even though that night Benton County really got loose offensively, I still like what I see from Westfall defensively. And then that kind of showed up last night in the Paint Valley game. So I Paint Valley is going through some hard times right now that every team's going to go through at some point in 2020, not only with the COVID, but then you throw in an injury. There's never a good year, John, to have an injury or some different things. You mm-hmm. haven't been this type of year. It's going to compound on you because of all the other stuff. I'm still trying to figure out, Bruce, maybe that 5 through 8, but the top heavy, boys league really with Unioda and Adina. I just really enjoyed that basketball game the other night. I might have some notes in my closing tonight on some of that, but thought it was really neat to see how certain people in their role really stepped up in crunch time and perform. But the top heavy is certainly the thought for the new year on the boys side for me.
Okay. I'm going to switch here and get your thoughts on the opposite side, if you will. But first, Shane, why don't you tell us what's coming up in the agenda otherwise?
Well, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to do that just because I like to give the shout out to the sponsors. You know, we talk about Pickaway Ross Career and Technology Center, their vocational work in the high school, as well as their adult programs, advanced services. I appreciate all that advanced services does for the website and for SVT Sports Talk. And then, of course, Blake there at North Fork Animal Clinic. So thank you to North Fork Animal Clinic for all the support. And I, as always, what we'll do here, we'll go segment by segment after we switch over and give these other thoughts, but we'll have Bruce be able to give North Fork Animal Clinic and Advanced Services of Pickaway Ross a little bit more detailed information out to our listeners. But throughout the show, we have an inbox that kind of the live streaming just doesn't seem to go away in terms of the topic. So I feel like it's relevant. We need to respond to that. Then with the release of our stats, speaking of Pickaway Ross there, we're John and I will just kind of go down through each category before we go over and really talk about a lot of different student athletes. And then we're going to kind of go around the website. I want to highlight some junior high, some JVs, some history, some 1,000 points, some certain things there. And then, you know, as always, John, I'll give you kind of a chance to see what we missed in case the agenda doesn't hit on something you want to talk about. You'll get that opportunity to. But again, thank you to all those sponsors. And, you know, Bruce, if you want us to go the other route there, but I'll just kind of turn it over to you and let you take us through however you see fit.
All right. Well, I mentioned I was going to kind of flip the sides on you here. So, John, you had the opportunity to give us your thoughts on the girls' side. Let's go, if you will, with your thought for the boys' side.
I just kind of, you know, Union is sitting at the top, but still has to go on the road to Edina and Piketon in the second half. Union is sitting 5-0. Obviously, that's where you want to be at this point in time, but they did beat Edina and Piketon both at home. They had to play an improving Zane Trace team again. You know, that'll be at home, but then, like Shane, you mentioned with Southeastern, I mean, they're pretty good, and that's a place Unio never plays well. Like in the tournament, even like we don't ever play well there. So I think that's the game to watch for even this week, as Unio at Southeastern, and you know it is more of a top heavy league. I you know, you mentioned some stuff with Paint Valley. You know, it's tough to see that for any team. I do think Westfall will just keep getting better as they get more consistent, you know, just practice. And they're outside of Blackburn, they're a really young team. Yeah. So it's just getting those guys some on court time. Now Lucas Blackburn is a total man. That's a huge help for them on the inside and leadership wise. But man, their young guards they're all pretty good. And they're just going to get better as the, you know, playing goes on. You know, and it's that Edina team, man. I was just watching them come out. I know we're big, at Uniota, we're big, but you know, that Edina team, just watching them warm up, man, they're big too. They got some nice length. Garrison looks so much better than he did last year. Just physically, he looks healthier, and just he can do the things that he was doing as a freshman and sophomore again, which gives them just a, you know, another level that they can do. You mentioned Chris Chandler in the beginning there with Piketon, and Bertie Fuller's playing really well for him as well. Man, when they can shoot the ball like that. I think they're 16-29 from three against Tremble. That's hilarious. Like, that's just,
they're going to guard you.
Yeah, they're going to guard you. And if they can start making shots, and that opens up everything else for them, and they're going to be able to drive you, and they're going to be able to score in different ways then too. So, you know, they're a team that's really interesting. Huntington's just going to keep getting better and better. You know, I like how they play. They're undersized, but they're a couple big kids, Free and Black. They're really hard. You know, they're going to compete every night. And I just think it's a league that, like you mentioned, Shane, is top heavy. But you can't get a night off. Like, I don't know if Payne Valley out there going to get Westfall, you know, as a night off, but you got to go up to the dome, and that's, no matter how it's lit, it looked much better. So I think that'll probably throw some teams off as well when they get in there. You know, it's there's not really an easy place to win in this league.
John, let me ask you about that. With you being in the gym the other night where I'm watching it on TV, you know, did you feel the home court advantage the other night? I'll say this. It's hard to say that Paint Valley wasn't ready to play because I think they won the first quarter 10-2. Mm-hmm. Then they got their best two players in foul trouble the whole night and just fouled out. But like the when I watched the Westfall Paint Valley game, it was one of the first times I'd watched the game this year where I felt a home court advantage. You can almost still feel the road game. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I just wonder what your take is on that, because you know, in the girls' game, you don't feel it as much anyway. But like in the guys' game, like in that Adena Union game the other night, did you feel a home court advantage?
I feel like you can a little bit. Like when we played out at Zane Trace, it felt like a huge home court advantage because you can definitely feel it, because if the crowd's into the game, you can still affect the game no matter how many people are there. As if you're loud enough, you can stay consistent. One thing I'll say for Adena, their crowd's very into it. Their freshman and JV teams stood behind the bench and they're cheering the entire game, kind of like a student section. And they're just locked into the game. So they kind of took away a little bit of the home court advantage. But, man, it was still loud. Like, it was loud even for 250 people or however many people were in there last night. So you definitely could feel a little home court advantage on that. But I thought the Adena crowd did a good job of kind of eliminating that in a way. But, yeah, I've noticed it, you know, in at least one of our road games where there is definitely a slight advantage there if your crowd's into the game.
Interesting.
I was just thinking about that, Shane. I wondered if like the home court advantage, I would not have thought the home court advantage was worth near as much this year as it was in the past years. And it sounds like it's still there, but maybe not to the extent that it normally is.
Like let's say it's like you almost feel like you're what, like 7 points down in some places or whatever, trying to get through it and stuff. It's probably down to like three. It's probably in half.
Yeah.
But I think it's still there a little bit.
Okay. That's interesting. When you go out, you're looking at, you know, going on the road there, like you said. Shane, what about your New Year's thought towards the girls' side?
Well, I kind of think John and I are on the same page earlier. The parity is what continues to jump out at you. And look, this is one thing we nailed on the preview show. We talked about this from day one. I think you can kind of see it coming. And what John mentioned with Adena is certainly fair. They've started to spread themselves out. They in third quarters, they've started to stretch leads out to, you know, 6, 10, 15. I'm trying to go down through the scoreboard there a little bit, look at where they're at the end of the third quarter. But, you know, beyond that, the matchups are fascinating, John. Some of the finishes have been really, really good. I mean, the Uniota Westfall game that you documented came down to the final possession. Uniota Huntington came down to the final possession. Southeastern Westfall went to double overtime. Southeastern, you've had the games where Huntington leads Southeastern for three quarters and then Southeastern comes back. The other day, Southeastern was in, I thought Paint Valley yesterday, you mentioned our game, John. Mm-hmm. I thought Paint Valley was in a dangerous spot there early second quarter where they didn't finish the first quarter the way they needed to. But then to the Paint Valley's credit, they, you know, to guard a team like that and only give up 2 points basically all the way up to the buzzer of the second quarter where Greaves hits the 23-24 footer there. That was certainly an incredible effort from the Paint Valley kids there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you just go all the way through. Even like you mentioned Zane Trace, to put some numbers behind what you're saying, take a look at the scoreboard and look at Zane Trace like entering the fourth quarter of some of these league games. They're down 5 to Uniota. They're down 8 to Piketon. They only give up 38 points in the whole game to Westfall. So they're right there. They're a little bit of an older team. They're athletic. They can really guard you. So it's the team stats kind of tell the story. You know, there's improved offenses. Some of the offenses that are high give up the most. It's not that they're not guarding well. It's just that's the tempo they play. Mm-hmm. So it's a real competitive situation where matchups certainly play a role in all this. But you're going to get some really competitive games. And right now, Adena, in terms of the mixture of their guard play, the depth on the front line, and then their ability really to go 7, 8, 9 deep. They faced adversity just like we all have. They're just a little bit more equipped to maybe handle it a little bit better.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to dive in here to the inbox. We have a question that we need to bat about, but first I want to mention Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. They've been with us for, what, 2 or 3 years now, sponsoring the podcast. They are the Southern Ohio's most trusted provider of heating, cooling services for your home and businesses for over 20 years now, whether it's installation, repair, or maintenance. Teams available 24/7 to respond. You can get on their website and get a consultation today, or you can call them at 877-947-4499. Their website, by the way, is advancedservicesHVAC.com, and we very much appreciate their continued support of the podcast. Guys, we, as mentioned here, have a question that came into the inbox, and I think Shane even alluded to this a little bit earlier when he was reviewing things. But the topic of streaming is, you know, as the season progresses, is getting some additional play, more so than maybe we thought it would. Was just kind of a thing that was maybe given, and now we have some questions about it. So let me just read this. It says, I have a serious question or topic for SVC Sports Talk. I'm not trying to attack any particular school or administration. I'm just asking an honest question about streaming the games. And it goes on to say, is it wrong to think that every school should offer a live stream of the games? Is it wrong to think that the school should keep the games up for people to go back and watch? Thanks so much for your response. My family really enjoys the show and the website. So I guess let's kind of break this down. First, the first question is it wrong to think that every school should offer a live stream of the games? What are your guys' thoughts on that topic alone?
Well, on that topic alone, absolutely. I mean, I don't see the excuse for not doing it. I think today's technology, in the circumstance that we're in the situation where, it's not like just only, you know, some friends of the family can't come. And there's a lot of cases where like the actual family can't come, you know what I mean? Like they've got to get babysitters. Kids can't get in. You've got grandparents, aunts, uncles, different things. So we're in a situation where absolutely every school needs to have some sort of live stream to where you can at least see the game. Now we can talk about what detail and what level of production it should be, in terms of announcer or having a scoreboard or letting people know what the score is. So again, there's some different levels of laziness or lack of effort, you know, certain schools go about, certain schools do a little bit better job of, but I guess the baseline answer, John, would have to be, yeah, you have to have some sort of dream, at least at every one of your home games.
Yeah, I completely agree. Not everyone's going to have like the huddle assist or huddle eye, whatever setup that like Unigut and Paint Valley have. I noticed at the game on Saturday that Southeastern had a bunch of different cameras set up that appeared that they were filming theirs. I know that a long time ago,
their journalism department.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen what they do there, if you haven't watched one of those games, it's really impressive.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is there? I know when I was in school, we had a video journalism class, and we did some streaming stuff with Southeastern Paint Valley. So I was pretty sure they still had that. So you know, it's the levels of it. You know, not everyone has the money to put in to get these things through their boosters programs or whatnot, or maybe they don't have that class available, but you've got to be able to figure out a way to, at least on Facebook Live or YouTube Live, if you can, to put some sort of, you know, a good video to have someone running it. Don't just put it somewhere. Just assume that you can see the whole court, because it's almost impossible. And how our courts are set up, and we don't really have great necessary setups to where we can see both baskets and everything. That's something that, if families can't get there, that needs to be something for people to be able to watch. And if you charge for it, whatever, to make up the cost of everything, I guess. But, just to give the offer is extremely necessary, especially right now.
Well, and Bruce, before we move on to that second question, I think Don's on to something there in terms of, the minimum requirement has to be met. And if you're not meeting it, it's really pretty lazy. And I would ask you, why not? It's really crazy not to have a video, at least for people to watch. That's the minimum requirement.
I'll kind of play devil's advocate. So you think it should be provided by the school gratis, or is it okay to charge for it?
In the SBC, there's a lot of different levels of provided by the school.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it may be, like you said, it could be someone using Twitter. It could be someone using Facebook. I've watched some Facebook that are outstanding. You know what I mean? People look up a phone or an iPad or whatever and show it. Some will even sit there and call the game, which is really nice. And they're not professional at it, but they're able to give you a little bit of feedback, at least of the one school there or so forth. Or, it's just, or if they can't put the graphic up there, or they don't know how to put the second camera up there, like some of these others have of the scoreboard, they'll go over on a dead ball and they'll show you the score, or they'll be there saying, hey, so-and-so's up 15-12 or whatever it is. But what we're really talking about here is effort, and the people not doing it, it's a lack of effort. And it's really where you have to care enough to at least put the minimum effort out there. Now, as far as charging and things like that, I think that you should probably make sure that you have consistent quality of your technology. Probably wouldn't hurt to throw in a little bit of score, a little bit of announcing and so forth if you're going to charge. But again, I understand the financial times and so forth if you're wanting to charge. I don't totally have a problem with that, but I do have a problem with schools just not doing it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I like you mentioned with the, if you're going to charge, it needs to be a certain quality, because, obviously schools are missing out on a lot of money on people coming in this year. So I'm completely fine with that. I just know if I'm going to pay to watch the game, I want to know what's going on, as opposed to just having to, like, if I take my eyes off of play, I can find out who scored a bucket. When, as opposed to maybe if I'm, I sneeze or something and somebody scores, who scored that? Yeah. So, I think there's got to be certain levels to it.
So if you were required to pay, you would expect it to be of a more, professional level is what you're saying.
Maybe not even professional, but just
professional is even a strong word. We're just saying be able to see the game and know what the score is.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I've kind of looked at both sides of this from the expected, what should be expected, what should be, I think there are people out there that expect it, and they're the very same people sometimes that won't get involved to help provide it. And that's when I kind of start breaking down with the word expected. Because it takes more volunteers probably to do that too. So in this time of tight budgets and everything, it's not like they're going to get paid. That's for sure.
Right. But here's something else. They can get into the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, if you can get somebody to, just help out and just say, hey, I know you're going to be just moving the camera and whatnot, even if it's just doing that.
Yeah.
Well, you still get to watch the game in person as opposed to watching it online. And, that's not necessarily how everyone wants to watch it, but it is better than nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think there are people out there that I think everybody would like to see it. I just think there are different levels of what the expectation is and so forth. What about this concept? It's in the question here. Is it wrong to think that the school should keep the games up for people to go back and watch? What do you think of that?
John, I'll go. As a coach, I probably don't want to stay up because that's a way to scout. I also understand it. Now, if there's a way to make it private and then give it to families after and say, hey, we're going to take, like when we played, you needed to play at Paint Valley. Shane, I know you did the commentary on it. Like, I know Kai William told me, hey, after, we're going to make this private, but if you guys, anybody wants a copy of it, we'll give you the password. Like, that's, to me, that's all you have to do on that, because I understand you don't want to keep it up, but like Adina at Uniota last night, basketball, if I think we take ours down a couple hours after. But it's like, well, if any of the Adina kids want it or the Uniota kids have it, now we all have the huddle. So the kids could share it with the family that way, but they could share it in a way without keeping it up. So I get it why people that maybe can't watch it live want to go back and rewatch it. But at the same time, as a coach, I completely understand why you wouldn't want to keep it up, because, it's, we can't get out and watch games in person to scout this year. I mean, we probably could, but more than likely you can't. And it's just, that's part of our job is to
utilize scout other resources. Teams. Yeah.
So I don't want to give that out to another team if it makes it a little easier on them.
Okay. Shane, are you in agreement with John?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much on the same page from the standpoint of, look, if we're in normal time and I was going out to a game, I'd obviously have to go to that game. Like, the other night I would have been at the Uniota Adina game. Well, I wouldn't have seen the Paint Valley Westfall game. Whereas the other night I had one on my computer, one on the TV. It's a situation. I was lucky enough to have some huddle access to watch the Southeastern Huntington game later. So since, there wasn't a live stream of that one, it's a situation where I guess I think maybe an hour or so that night's not that big a deal, but yeah, to have it up, for access all the way. I'm not going to lie, as a coach, I'm everywhere trying to find stuff. Mm-hmm. I was scouting just about 3 or 4 hours ago off of some guy's Facebook Live off of his phone. And I'm sitting there trying to pause it and look at different sets and different things or whatever. So yeah, you're trying to find every advantage possible, in terms of what's out there. But I love what you said about the access to the players or to the parents, like, hey, if you have a grandparent or an aunt, uncle wants this, I can get you this, but it doesn't have to be out there public. So, I think that's fair. I think in terms of, even if you're paying, I don't know, I assume you could have access to go back, but even if you're paying, I think it's fair that you're still watching it live or within an hour or two after, wouldn't you say, John? Because if you were paying, that's when you'd be watching it live, in person. So I think that's fair. That's probably the coach in me talking a little bit there, Bruce. I know a lot of times we leave the junior high stuff up to give them a little bit more. I guess I feel stronger about the first part of this email in terms of you have to do something. If nothing else, sell your program, sell your kids or whatever. You know what I mean? Right. Like, to not do it, you're basically just saying, we don't care about that.
Why is this an idea or a concept that maybe will outlive the COVID times? I often wonder if maybe the home team shouldn't provide a video stream, a video feed, if you will, of the game, and that the visiting team could somehow then, if they so choose, provide an audio supplement to it. They could do play-by-play from their standpoint. I know that's like what all the Fox affiliates all over the country do for, when the Reds go on the road to San Diego, they don't take their Cincinnati cameraman with them. they pick up the feed from the video feed.
Right.
And I just wonder if that's not something maybe down the road. And again, you know, you coaches have your all the things that you've got to worry about. This isn't one of them, but maybe the league or somebody else could say, hey, every venue provides a video feed. And then if they so choose to stream it, their announcers could do the audio on their channel, if you will. And then you could provide that same video feed back to the visiting team, and they could, you know, either take that and stream it on their channel or whatever. Well, I think that's kind of what's happening now. I mean, we all rely on the home team pretty much, don't we?
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll say, you know, kind of in a petty way, of we don't even have a league commissioner, so we're not gonna make teams do anything. We're gonna say, hey, coaches, do you want to do this? Yes. Okay. We'll take it to your principals. Well, then the principals, their ADs will be like, oh, well, our coaches never said anything. And it just goes round and round every year. But I agree. We did the Sosa actually streamed the Adena Unieta girls game. Mm-hmm. And the Jacob Wise, who works for WKKJ, the paints, and I think does some stuff for Sosa now too, with he sent me a message asking me for something with the huddle assist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the day before. So I gave it to him, and he was able to stream the game from the Unieta huddle. And then add his commentary to it.
Mm-hmm.
So really it is a possibility to do, where if we're playing, we'll just go back to last night. If we're playing Adena and they want to do their own streaming while using the same video, they could easily do it.
Yeah.
They just have to have the equipment, and it links up and the timing's right and everything. So I think this will still be a thing in the future, because it's kind of like, you know, I'll use a concert as an example. You can watch a concert online, but it's not the same as going to it in person.
Yeah.
You know, there might be a night where, you know, you're really looking forward to going to a game whenever we're allowed to have fans again, but you're not feeling well, but you can still watch the game.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like you're missing out because it's there, but you're still going to like the people that still want to go to the games will still go to the games, but people that still want to watch it without going and maybe deal with crowds and whatnot will still be able to watch it. So I do think this will stick around.
Shane,
I think it'll
go ahead, John. I was just going to say,
I think it'll stick around in like varying degrees as well.
Shane, I was going to ask you, Shane, do you think this stream, push for streaming will outlast COVID?
Well, I think it's going to really be financially driven in terms of some decisions with the OHSAA and how they're going to feel about live sporting events being out there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they've had some pretty strict policies on that in the past in terms of the video part of it. And so I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. I think there's going to be a lot of people see a lot of dollar signs. So I'm sure that they're going to be curious on how to go about it. I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of legal issues to work through there in terms of rights and, especially with it being live. I'm not saying maybe some playbacks and some different things like that, but mm-hmm. The live part of it's what I don't know if I quite have an answer for just yet.
I think technology is going to push them into, you know, it's changed our lives so much. But many parents now could, you know, sit there in the stands and do a Facebook Live. And, you know, as long as they can kind of control their yelling for their team or whatever. And sometimes you just expect that. I mean, you know, you're going to get that. That's going to force, I think, the OHSAA to deal with this a little bit quicker than they probably want to. And I know they're in kind of dire straits as well. So I think it's going to outlive us. Good question from our listener there, Shane. Anything else that you guys want to talk about with respect to this question, or if we kind of put it to bed?
I think that's all I have.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, we're going to go on here and talk a little bit about the website. First, we want to mention Pickway Ross Career and Technology Center. Specifically, we want to talk about their adult education program, where they focus on the fact that they offer in-demand career training in under a year for many of their programs. All their full-time programs are on the Ohio's in-demand jobs list. And they look for things to they train for jobs that are out there, including health technology, skilled trades, public safety, and IT. And keep in mind that all their full-time programs are financial aid eligible for those who qualify, just like regular colleges and universities. And you can give them a call at 740-642-1288. All kinds of success stories out there about this, some of which I know of personally as well. But you might look up information on them at pickawayross.com or give them a call again at Pickway Ross Career and Technology Center about their adult education program, 740-642-1288. And as Shane mentions, they sponsor our stats on their high school program, I think. Is that correct, Shane? They kind of do the stats for us as well? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of stats, you have released some of your stats for the basketball program, and we get a little ways into the end of this season so that you don't play the on pace for game or something like that. So we're going to kind of look at various categories here, and I just kind of want you guys to maybe, Shane, as you start here, you can first talk about how we can get to the stats, and then basically mention some of the observances. What is significant within that category for boys and or girls? And John, you can just join in here too as well. So the first category, and you can pick this up when you start here, Shane, was points that we want to talk about. But why don't you talk first about how we get to the stats on your website?
Yeah, well, again, thank you to Pickway Ross for the support. This is something that's been ongoing in over a decade now on our website. One of the things we do, and when we decided to do this, we said, okay, if we're going to do it, we're going to have to do more than just your points or rebounds or whatnot. We want to really highlight the complete player. So you see it in really all of our sports in the fall and winter and spring. And so we go points, rebounds, assists, free throws, field goals, threes made, steals, blocks, charges taken. Is even something that we've added in. So again, we cover every type of role. We highlight every type of kid and every type of player. We take a lot of pride in that. To get to the stats, you can see it in several places on the homepage. You'll see the Pickaway Ross there. You'll see the link to all the stats if you're curious to go back to other sports and take a look. Then on both the boys and girls basketball pages, it's pretty well headline there again with the Pickaway Ross logo and so forth. That'll take you. And then once you're on that page, you can even go back to previous years if you're wanting to compare it. And John, I'll kind of get started since I'm already talking about it on the point side. I guess what jumps out at me on the girls is the increased scoring. When I see us all the way down to 12, still up close to 11 a game. And, you know, I know and helping organize some of those stats. I mean, I want to say we get all the way up to like 20 before we get down under 9. It's just really remarkable how many good scorers are not on that list. You know what I'm saying? Like there's some kids that I know throughout the league that have scored, 15 to 20 points in a basketball game that aren't even on that list. I don't know if that's normal in girls. So, yeah, obviously with Basie and Graves and Petit up there, those are three names you'd probably guess. And then you see a lot of good players that do more than just score, certainly, throughout the course of a game. And then as I move over on the boys' side there, again, kind of predictable, maybe who you would see in the top 3 to 4 spots. As I go down, I think I see some emerging scores. When I see Wheeler really starting to take another step this year. Dax Estep is a sophomore. Nalen Robinson is a sophomore. Hertenstein's been a kid at Huntington that's kind of jumped out at me. Trey Swain's had some big games. So a lot of those other names on there are names that maybe, the Little, the Bennett, Chandler, the Grubb, you'd guess. But I guess some of those other names are kind of the ones that surprised me. So, again, in recap, I'd say on the girls' side, it's the amount of kids capable of scoring eight or more in a game. And then on the guys, I think it's some of those newcomers that are really starting to take their game to another level to where they're able to average the double figure amount other than maybe just getting it here and there.
Yeah, and I'll start with the boys' side, and this is going to be a stat that you may enjoy, Shane, and this is kind of, Bruce, you might enjoy this for the on pace too.
Okay.
right now, Isaac Little is on pace to be the first Unita boys player to lead the league in scoring since the 1995-96 season.
Wow.
It hasn't even been close either. Like, they never have the impact score. Usually it's more of a,
team effort.
Spread out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spread out thing. And, but right now it's Mike Fout, led the league with like 23.5 points a year. And then obviously I think there was a Combs, I don't know if you're related to him or not, that led the league a couple times, before that.
Was he a point guard?
No. Okay. No, that's why I don't know if we're related.
I see. Go ahead.
One scored a lot, the other one was a distributor. But and then like you mentioned, Shane, with the we got two Paint Valley players in the top six. Something Estep I could tell was gonna be pretty good last year, just on JV and a little bit of time in varsity, and man, he's taken a big leap forward. Really impressed with him so far. Just you expect it out of Bennett, Chandler, Grubb, Little, but like you mentioned, Wheeler, another one. And I really enjoy Nalen Robinson's game. On the girls' side, I've watched Macy Graves a couple times so far and in person, and the way she gets her 20-plus a game is just so easy. And she doesn't – like there's one play last night or yesterday afternoon where she drove to the basket. And I looked at Derek Webb. I was there covering with him, and I was like, you can't stop that. Like, and it was after she, splashes three or four threes a game and can just do it in a variety of different ways. Batiz, another one that I think's done a really good job scoring this year. It's just, I'm also impressed with the fact that Adina's got three kids near 11 points or more a game. That's where you can really tell where, they can hurt you in a lot of different ways. And two of them are freshmen with Garrison and Williams to go along with Smith. So I like you mentioned, Shane, with the amount of scoring going on in the girls league is much improved, and I think that's where you can tell the quality of play has risen as well.
Guys, we next topic here is rebounds, and I'm going to give John a chance to go first on rebounds if you want to.
Yeah, that's good, because I want to just laugh at Olivia Smith's 16 rebounds a game because it's so ridiculous. And then, she had, 17 again yesterday or whatever, and just does it, just has such a good nose for the ball. Averaging 16 rebounds a game is ridiculous, especially because it's not like she's, tall. She's athletic. She's strong, has a really good nose for the ball, goes and finds it and rebounds it really well, high points it really well. Then Emily Allen, Zane Trace, 13 a game. It's just, you could tell, we've talked about her, from volleyball and into the season already, with just how hard she competes at everything. So that's not too surprising. But I feel like the rebounds are up across the league as well, with seven kids over seven rebounds a game and then another four over six a game. I mean, just doing a good job of just getting the ball on the girls' league. And then on the boys' side, I mentioned Lucas Blackburn, being – just really tough, averaging nearly a double-double a game. And then you got Ashton Allman, only a freshman, with eight boards a game. And I know, the Western game, I feel like he only played in the second quarter and 6 points, eight rebounds in that quarter. He's going to be an issue for the league for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, to me, that really stands out. And Luke Corcoran, another kid who's an undersized kid, rebound 7 boards a game is really impressive. But the overall rebounding numbers across the league look like they're down at the top part. But I think that just goes with how hard teams are going at just rebounding as a team as well.
Shane?
I think John's last point's one that jumps out at me there. On the boys' side particularly, you see so many more four-guard lineups now, the four-out-one style of basketball, that I think more and more teams are rebounding collectively instead of having that, you know, one guy over the years when you think of, you know, I'm dating myself here maybe a little bit, but back to like a Scott Keller, Jason Cruz, or even into the modern day game of Dylan Swingle. I think it's more of a spread out type of thing where, you know, they're doing it with 3 and 4 people. And I think you see that on the boys' side when you see Southeastern spread it out. You see Adina spread it out. You see Piketon spread it out. So, like, I'm seeing, you know, Bennett and Sykes almost identical numbers with Garrison right there. Well, I guess Garrison too, like all of them. You know, the Chandler and Swain teammates there, the same way with Estep, Corcoran, and Almner. You mentioned Estep and Paint Valley along with Grubb. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where a Blackburn at 8.8 doesn't have another teammate there at 5.5. So it's that's an interesting just basketball concept to me. And then on the girls side, you mentioned those three people up there with Smith, Allen, Basie. That's tremendous. I think it's also neat to see where Fuglesong and Ader kind of, you know, together, if you combine them into, you know, one post player, take a look at that number. All of a sudden, you've got that 16.6. It's that type of thing. So, I would even give a shout out to someone like an Avery McFadden. You know, I know Paint Valley, that's a kid that doesn't get enough credit. Where, you know, we've talked about the starting five. You highlighted Olivia Smith and what she does. Abby Stanforth had 20 yesterday. Hannah Urig scores it. Kendall Dye is a really good player. Whereas Avery's playing with 4 starters that average over 9 a game in terms of scoring. But then you look at the point guard position to be averaging 7 rebounds a game. That's a pretty impressive total. So I think the same could be said for you know, some other kids throughout the league. As you extend off there, I think you find some really good guards that rebound the basketball as well. So I think that's probably the highlight of those. Obviously, those are some terrific numbers up there. Any night you're going out, you're averaging this deep into the season in the double figures, you're obviously making it a point to box out and go get the ball, and there's something to be said for that for sure.
All right, guys, so much for points and rebounds. What about assists? And go back to you, Shane, for this, if you want.
Well, assists seem to be a little bit down to me overall. I guess as you go deeper and deeper on the girls' side, I guess the 8 tied at, you know, 2 a game, that kind of tells you that maybe some teams are having the spread out a little bit more. I think the Avery Miller at 3.6, you have McFadden there at 4.3 leading the girls, but Avery Miller at 3.6 was one that really jumped out at me, just because I think that kind of shows you her versatility, where some of those other ones up there, John, are a little bit more point guards, mm-hmm. a little bit more people that maybe you would expect to have the ball in their hand creating, where I think it gives you an idea of just how talented Avery Miller is there at Uniota. And then on the boys' side, you know, probably not a ton of surprises. Again, seems a little low for me. But again, I just think we're in a different time now. I think we're in a different time where more and more point guards are asked to score the basketball, and so oftentimes they're not only assisting, but they might be, you know, throwing the pass that leads to the assist and that type of thing. So, we'll follow that category as we get a little bit more sample size, but just that would be my overall summary of both of them. Is the overall list seems a little low to me.
John, anything on assists?
That's really what I was thinking, was, you know, it's pretty low, but I mean, it's kind of the names you expect to be there, even on the boys' side with, you know, Garrison, you know, Grubb's got the ball in his hands a lot, Sykes, you know, Bennett, maybe you don't think it was Cam DeBoard because he just sometimes you don't notice him, and then all of a sudden, like last night, he had 10 and 10, and you just sometimes you don't notice it with some of these guys. You know, on the girls' side, you know, I think you really nailed it with, you know, McFadden does a lot of things, but Avery Miller is one that I think I counted either 6 or 7 categories that she's in the top 10 of, just kind of showing her overall game. For Uniota, Garrison's a name you're going to see in there a lot. Volgabor is a lot. Mahaley Farmer is another one that's probably underappreciated. I saw that she committed to, I believe, Oklahoma Wesleyan.
Good player. Yeah,
good player. Does a lot of little things. But yeah, I see them kind of down across the league. But Shane, you mentioned a lot of 4-out, 1-in stuff, and I think that goes with the teams that do a lot of the dribble drive.
Yeah.
Because it goes to, you know, you're doing a little bit more isolation stuff, and I think that kind of goes to where that's why the assists are going to be down. I think it just kind of goes with how the game's played right now.
Okay. Next category is free throw percentage.
Yeah, I'll start with the girls' side. You know, I just mentioned Avery Miller on that and shooting 90%.
Yeah,
just insane. Well, and if you look at the top, the top four, top five, you know, are players that you expect to do it every night, and it's, you know, Sydney Huff at 75%. That's still a high quality percentage. Then you got Bailey Volgamore, Allison Basie, both over 80% as well. And then Macy Graves is at 89%. Like, honestly, yesterday she missed a couple free throws against you guys, Shane, and I was shocked. Like, because it's just everything she does is just so easy. And I would still say she's probably over 85% on the year. You know, those numbers in the past have not been anywhere near that. You know, if you look at different years, we've had some not very good free throw shooting across the league. And then on the boys' side, Isaac Little shooting 83%. He's just – to me, him and Graves and Miller are very similar. It's the same shot every time. It doesn't matter. It's they put so much air on it and backspin and give themselves a chance. And then Dylan McDonald, I think, will be – someone we'll talk about in the field goal percentage as well, as one of those underappreciated players across the league. He's just so consistent and efficient as he does it. Doesn't get a ton of shots, but when he does, it goes in at a high rate, and he does it at the free throw line as well.
Shane?
Well, I think what jumps out at me is the 70% mark's kind of always been my line. I look at it at the free throw line, and when you start getting up over that, it really just adds a whole other dimension how you can score and how hard you are to game plan for. You know, you mentioned Graves, just because that's something that's been on my mind this week. I'll get and talk about what a terrific player. I mean, yeah. You know, you spend hours and hours studying film on her throughout the week, and you know, you're walking through things. You think you have a real good plan, and you go out and you feel like you really execute a good plan, and you pick up the book after she got 20. You know what I mean? It's one of those where it's just terrific, though. And these kids get to the free throw line, and they accidentally, you know, get 7, 8, 9, 10 points a game at the line. You know, Little's a great example of this. His ability to control tempo. I know he's on the cover of our recent Great Seal Sports, where I was talking in there about, you know, his ability to take the game and just control the tempo. And then you get in the bonus and you get the right officiating crew one night. He starts getting to the line 10, 12 times. He's not just getting there 12 times, John. He's making 11. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those where – It's one thing to put a kid on the line 10 times and he or she makes 5. Well, you can live with that. But they start getting to the line 8, 9, 10 times and they're making them at that clip. Well, now all of a sudden trying to match up with an Avery Miller and a Macy Graves and an Allison Basie and a Bailey Volgamore, Sydney Huff. And the same way on the boys' side, you know, when I see like a Nalen Robinson 70%, I know he had a big game at the free throw line earlier this year where I want to say it was like 10 for 10 or 9 for 10 or something like that, where it's an incredible skill. So, you know, I just think that it not only puts them at the line, they see the ball go through, It gives them more confidence as a scorer, but also you're obviously fouling them to get them there. So it's also taxing your defense. It's probably your best defenders guarding them, right? So they're in foul trouble. So it's just a domino effect that the two things, Bruce, that jump out at me is these kids, their ability to draw the foul and then their ability to convert when they get to the free throw line.
All right. So next category on the stats page is field goal percentage.
Yeah, it's just the efficiency. I talked about this in the preview show, so I won't talk a lot about it here. I think if you're really a basketball nut, I think if you get an opportunity to even look deeper into stat sheets of each team, like if you go on Max Preps and you look at different things, I think it's really impressive to just see the efficiency of players throughout. I thought the biggest play in the Adina Uniota game the other night, John, was late in the game when Deshaun went baseline there and made the outstanding. I thought for sure he was pinned, and he made the incredible look. I believe it was Park up top.
Yep.
You know, he knocks it down. Like, how many times in the last year and a half has Park made that shot? You know what I mean? It's just that it's that efficiency of that shot. So it's you know, so when I look down through here, it's obviously very impressive when I see anybody, you know, 5, 6, 7 games in the year shooting over 60%. That's very impressive. But really it has to do more. It's just if you're the go-to scorer, really impressive. So, you know, when I look down through and I see a Stone Rock there, Zane Trace, I think he's an outstanding up and comer. That's one that jumped out at me here. I think Dalton Black is an improving kid at Huntington. And then over on the girls' side, you know, just things like how many different scorers are being asked to shoot the ball quite a bit that are shooting it at a high clip, you know, like a Basie, like a Graves, like a Huff, and so forth. So those are some of the things that jump out at me. But efficiency is certainly a stat that's really intriguing to look at.
Yeah, and I'll start on the girls' side as well. The fact Basie's shooting 52% is, you know, kind of insane to me with how much attention she gets. And that means that she's probably not getting a whole lot of easy shots. Graves shooting 43%, like you mentioned, these kids they're asked to do a lot for their teams and do a lot of scoring. And you know, maybe if they get even more shots, those numbers are going to go even higher. Focal Song's 56% to me, you know, stands out on the girls' side where she can, you know, give them that inside presence. You know, Ader's done a nice job there as well, but, you know, giving the few extra inches as well, you know, that's a nice 1-2 punch inside for them. Then on the boys' side, I mentioned Dylan McDonald. I mean, 67%. He's not just, he does, if you've watched him play, he's all over the place. Like he shoots inside or outside. That's where Dax Estep's number to me really, really stands out because, he'll go outside and shoot the three as well and shoot over 60%. Really impressive.
Right.
Especially as a sophomore, you've got like a Chandler at 53%. He shoots a ton of threes also. Different guys that can do it in different ways really is impressive to me.
All right. Next, we look at the topic of the three-point field goal. John?
Yeah. On the boys' side, I think it just kind of goes with how many different guys can do it. You know, it's maybe we're not having like just one individual standout that, you know, is going to hit a bunch every game. But then, of course, you have to look at, you know, Logan Bennett, I mean, 15 threes through however many of the games this was. But I know last night he hit 3 threes against us, and those were his 3 field goals because we did so much we could to keep him out of scoring inside. But then he just stepped out and hit a couple of just ridiculous threes that, you know, just shows his ability to do it at different levels. I think an underrated player in the league is Caleb Smith of Huntington. Really good shooter, has really deep range. Hit a game winner for them in their one win against Circleville earlier during the break. And then you just see different names, you know, Grubb, Little, Sykes, DeBoer, Greenwalt, Fuller. Chandler is obviously going up in that too. Then Hertenstein, you know, different kids that can do it. Trey Miller, Cole Miller, different kids. you know, maybe think of their game a little bit different than as a shooter, but just showing the amount of guys in the league that can shoot it is really impressive. Then on the girls' side, you see a Graves who, hey, you said 23, 24 footer at the end of that second quarter, Shane. I might even say it was deeper than that. It was just a nice, easy shot where she can just knock it down from very deep. Really impressive for her. Petit can beat you in a bunch of different ways as well. You know, and then Stanforth for you guys yesterday, hitting the three threes, really was at a time to really help swing the game in Paint Valley's favor, because she could just step outside and knock it down. You know, when she gets her feet set, she's a really good shooter as well. So yeah, that's my thoughts on the threes.
Shane?
Well, I think on the 3-point shot, obviously, you know, Chandler and Fuller jump out at me this week, with these stats being done there a week ago. As we get into the next update, right off the top of my head, I mean, goodness, Chandler just hit, what, 7 the other night?
Yeah.
I think he has 11 in his last two games, so he's obviously going to shoot to the top of this list. You know, Bennett, you just mentioned, hit, you know, several in the last week as well. So, you know, the size of Bennett and the size of Chandler is certainly a factor. I think Kim DeBoer and underappreciated shooter. I think he's a guy that gets a lot of attention for his defense, rightfully so. He's a guy that on a lot of teams would probably be asked to shoot it a lot more. On that particular team, it's kind of, you know, with obviously little, and then the ability to spread it around to a lot of different guys to do what they do really well, and he certainly can shoot it well. Teammate Greenwald right there with him, that jumps out at me, because what that does, man, is it just spreads the court. You know, you have to, you know, a little so good off the dribble, but you really have to just kind of pick your poison sometimes in terms of how much are you going to help off. So that's certainly a factor. And then on the girls' side, you mentioned something, I won't be repetitive, but I'll mention Emma Garrison there. It's the ability sometimes, the stronger kids, John, in the girls' game, the ability to just catch and shoot. You know, I mean, some kids need a little bit more time to get it off. You know, what separates Graves and Petit and so forth as they get older is their ability to get them off. And Garrison is going to kind of fall into that line. Just a terrific shooter. Teammate Williams, Kiera there, she's a terrific player as well. We've highlighted them. So then Volgamore, her size to be able to step off. Betts of Uniota, had a chance to see her play a couple different times in the last couple weeks, like her game. And then Steele's really started to shoot the ball. She got off to a slow start this year. She's really started to shoot it well over Huntington's last two or three games. So she's a kid that I think by season's end will push close to, you know, 25, 33s. I really do. So yeah, the 3-point shot, certainly a weapon. And when role players step out and show the ability to make it, it starts making those stars that much harder to guard.
All right, next category is steals. And I think, Shane, you're going to lead us off on this.
Yeah, I think we've highlighted Michaela Lovely quite a bit. Henry at Westfall is a terrific defensive player, very, very active throughout. So I think as you go down through there, the athleticism is what jumps out at me. With Allen Farmer, you know, Olivia Smith, Avery Miller, Chris Wheeler. It's the athleticism of kids all the way up and down. On the boys' side, with Little and DeBoer's teammates right there at the top, but that shouldn't surprise you. You go on down and see Galloway and Mark. It's hard to believe we're this far in the show and haven't talked about Galloway the other night. My goodness. Mm-hmm. How impressive was that? I mean, he started showing me things in his offensive game, and I'm sitting here watching the game. I'm like, I just laughing a couple times on a jab step and a pull up at 15 feet. But yeah, defensively, just, you know, you see four Uniota kids there in the top 10. It shouldn't surprise you, because when you watch them play half court defense, it looks like there's like eight of them out there. I mean, it's impressive, long, lanky, and that's certainly been a trademark of this Uniota team, and I think it's going to make them tough to beat on the stretch.
John?
Yeah, and then I like what you said with, you know, the Uniota kids, and I think another one that's probably an underrated defender is Cater Marco, where last night he didn't take a shot, but his man didn't score the entire game. So, you know, it's he can do it. I think he had 0 points, 3 rebounds. I don't even know if he had a steal, but he did have one steal last night. But it's like, man, he impacts the game in so many different ways without even having to score. But another kid that I think we'll see on these lists a lot in the coming years is Casey Klein of Westfall. Really quick, good, solid guard. I'm sure his scoring numbers will just keep going up throughout the year as well. And he's going to be one of these impact players for the Mustangs for as long as he's got Westfall uniform on. And then on the girls' side, you know, you mentioned the athleticism going down the list. You know, Lovely just does it in a bunch of different ways. I think Kyle Henry's one of those underrated athletes across the league as well. And yes. I know you mentioned that. And, you know, I think you really covered it really well on the girls' side.
Blocks is the next category, gentlemen.
Like 5.3 is hilarious. Like I know Mullins is tall and long, but man, she's got really good timing too. You know, can impact the game in different ways because, oh, you don't shoot her over her, then you try to like pass around her, and oh, she's still got a 9'7" wingspan or whatever it is, and just really good, really solid defensive player. 5.3 blocks a game is insane, and then Kendall Dye. You know, I really like her game for Green Valley. I think she's coming along. You know, a really nice addition for the Bearcats. Gives them a different way to score. Also does a nice job on the defensive end. You look over at the boys' side, and then you know you have Eastern Free. Both are over a block a game. But then you go up, and you got Galloway at 1.9. blocks a game, and that number actually went up this week as well. And you know, as a freshman, just he can do it in so many different ways. Where last night he starts the game off driving to the basket to get a layup, but then he blocks 3 shots on the other end, and as you said, dug out and makes a couple jump shots. You know, that's he's gonna be a lot to deal with. And then the Allman kid also 2 blocks a game for Southeastern, really impressive for freshman. He looks like he's going to be probably the next one in the long lineage of great bigs from Southeastern. You know, really stands out to me as well.
You know, not a lot to say on the blocks. I think, and this is probably the defensive coach in me, I think, you know, obviously Mullins at her size, it's not just how many she blocks. It's just the fact that, you know, she's there and how many she changes. I mean, it is insane. Very athletic, very, very good timing, as you said. Outside of that, I think a lot of people could probably stay out of a little bit more foul trouble if their blocks would come down. Yeah. You know, say it's one of those where now, you know, Galloway's a unique athlete. He's different. Some of those guys. But in all honesty, I'm glad you mentioned Kendall Dye. In 20 years of coaching at her age, I haven't coached very many just team defenders with her defensive IQ. Really, really impressive. The Python group defends really well. And I guess that'll kind of lead over, if you don't mind, Bruce, just kind of over to the charges.
Yep.
I think what I'm talking about is, you know, if you're not going to block the shot, if you're not really, if that's not who you are as a help defender, really come over and get set and take the charge. And I think it's real impressive to see Wolf there, the young man at Westfall, was 7. I always like to see a player like Logan Bennett on this list, John, because when your best player comes over and takes charges, it becomes a lot easier to sell it throughout your program. So I think that's impressive. So I always look for those types of things. And then, you know, over on the girls' side, you don't see the charge as much in the girls' game, and you don't see it called as much in the girls' game. You know why? I'm not sure. Hmm. Maybe sometimes the contact isn't as obvious, or you know, there could be some different travels, different things. It's just it's different. As someone who's coached on both sides, it's certainly different. Maybe that's a whole other discussion for another day. But so not as many there. Wyman at Westfall and Lovely and Williams and McNally and Johnson. They're the two Piketon teammates. They're two leading the way. But and some of those numbers will change, I'm sure, too, because kids have played another game or two. So, but yeah, the charges and the blocks together, John's an interesting coaching concept, because I understand why Marissa Mullins is going to try to block shots. Some of these other kids on here, they probably would be better off in terms of their minutes going up and staying out of foul trouble if they would try to block less shots.
Yeah, one thing I'll say for Logan Bennett on the charges, I'd prefer last night if he would have tried to take a charge instead of blocking Galloway on the dunk attempt, which was probably going to be a monster dunk, but then, you know, Bennett just goes up and just knives him, and it was really impressive play. But yeah, you know, the team defensive concepts with Westfall and Paint Valley having a bunch of kids on here. You know, I watched a film on Westfall at Amanda Clear Creek. I think Amanda had it on their Facebook or whatever. And Ashton Nunnemaker stood and took a charge from a kid that was a minimum 250. And if you see Nunnemaker, he's not a big kid. Right. You know, didn't get the call either. Like, I was irate watching film because he stood there and just took it right in the chest. So I'm giving him credit for another charge taken. Like, it didn't get called, but I'm giving him credit for it. You know, the Westfall Paint Valley kids, you know, doing a really good job of taking charges. And then, like you mentioned, you'd love to see a star do it as well with a Bennett and even a Gullion in there. Yeah. But on the girls' side, like you mentioned, it's I've seen kids take charges where it's just not called for whatever reason. But shout out to like a Wyman who's one of those really undersized players as well, taking a couple charges. You know, she's going to be a really good one for Westfall as well. So I do think that's a stat that I'm so glad that you added to the website a couple of years ago.
I think boys flop better. I don't even mean that in a bad way. I think the boys just understand the flop and the different things, where a lot of times I'll see great position defenders on the girls' side. Well, the person's not coming as hard into them to knock them down. And honestly, it costs them some block calls sometimes that are really unfortunate. So, yeah, that's an interesting topic probably for another day.
Well, that's a great review, guys, of the stats page. Shane, just for those that wonder, how often do you update this then?
We do our best to do it every week. Obviously, football's a lot easier because it's the exact schedule every week.
Right.
You have to keep in mind with Tuesday games and different things going on. A lot of times when you see an update, you know, your son or daughter who you follow might be, you know, they might have just had a great game on a Friday night when they're being updated on a Saturday morning, but those might have been coming in from 4 days ago. You know what I mean? So we're trying to balance 16 stat sheets from 8 boys, 8 girls. Yeah. So we do our best every week, but keep in mind those will always just naturally be just a little bit behind.
Sure. That's certainly understandable. Great. Okay, guys, we're going to continue to review little parts of the website here. But first, we want to mention again our sponsorship from North Fork Animal Clinic. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff continuing to sponsor the podcast. They're located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, and you can give them a call for all your small pets needs at 740-773-7387. Of course, they have a great website, which is the URL for that, or the address is North Fork Animal Clinic. Clinic.com. You can look them up as well. That's North Fork Animal Clinic, boarding and grooming at 740-773-7387. As I mentioned, a little bit more about exploring the website. Shane, you want to talk first about win streaks?
Yeah, well, I think what I'll do here, guys, if you're okay with it, I don't want to close your notes off. And yeah, you know, with us going a little bit longer this week here, what I want to do is summarize these here, John. And then I know you're so good with history and so forth. Maybe just give us a comment on what you'd really like to see the people pay attention to. If they pay attention on the homepage of the website, they'll see a banner there, win streaks. That takes you back through all of the biggest win streaks of every varsity sport, boys, girls, and throughout a lot of our sports. The 1,000-point page, those are relevant right now because every time Logan Bennett plays, every time Allison Basie plays, you'll see by their name on the scoreboard page whatever they are all time, and you go to those pages, you'll see where they rank in the Edina or the Huntington all-time list, respectively, for their school, as well as the all-time SVC list. And then we also, at the top of the varsity scoreboards, have links for junior high scoreboards, freshman JV scoreboards. And then we also have history pages that are located on the girls and boys basketball. So again, if you're having trouble finding those, reach out to myself, reach out to John. You know, we'll help you find those. But I guess I wanted to highlight those, John. Maybe throughout the year, if we have more time, we'll talk more about the individual pages. Mm-hmm. But the junior high, I think it's fun to follow what's coming up when we see the impact of these freshmen on the girls' side there at Edina that we talked about, Purnell Southeastern we talked about. I think that's really important. And then at the JV level, I was so impressed with the talent level that Southeastern has down through their program. I know at the freshman level, you know, they're getting some extra kids some playing time and so forth, but their JV team is very, very talented. And I know they have some kids going up and down, and then obviously very, very impressed with your freshman JV. I've talked to you about that, and I think you've got to be excited about the development of players that you're able to work with and go through, and you've got to get great satisfaction in seeing some of these kids come up to the varsity level this year and impact games and so forth. So I guess that's where I'm coming from there. I would encourage people to look at those pages and so forth. I guess what I would give you in this segment here is what do you feel like jumps out at you in terms of some of your favorite pages, maybe in terms of your history as well as your day-to-day or week-to-week visit to the website?
Well, I'm doing I actually mentioned this to you the other day in a text about how I'm doing some extra history work for my page as well. And you know, being able to find history for the last 12 or 10, 12 years, whatever it is on the website for each season is 13 is outstanding. And then you look back and you can say, okay, who won the league in 1980, whatever. And you can find it. You have the player of the year. You have the coach of the year, you know, across, and that makes it so easy to find. The 1,000-point scores. I love that page because you can just, you know, yeah, it doesn't necessarily say the entire game for a player. So if a player is not on that list, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But it also kind of shows who some of the elite scorers in league history are. You know, and I'll say
this. Well, it makes your research too, John. I know I've come across some before where, like, I'm shocked that they're not on there. And I'll go find out that all so-and-so was hurt their sophomore year or missed 15 games or something. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, it's fun to look back at, like, I'll use an Evan Legg as an example, as a player who was their point guard as a sophomore, and then his junior and senior year just blows up scoring wise. I mean, he's still your point guard, but and then you're like, man, why did he only average like 10 a game as a sophomore? Oh, because they had two guys average 20. It's just like, so you can do some more research there. You know, and I'll say this, I've watched our eighth grade boys play multiple times, and man, the league is still going to be really good coming up. That St. Trace is a really talented, eighth grade group. Wait, if you don't get a chance to watch them in junior high, wait till you watch the Gerald kid that's coming up as a point guard for Zane Trace in the next couple of years. Is really a standout. I like Piketon's eighth grade group. You know, I like to be able to follow those teams, and you just look on those boys and girls basketball pages, you can find those stats and whatnot. And I'm looking forward to coaching against that Southeastern group coming up this weekend. You know, it'd be a nice challenge for our kids.
It really is. We were just talking, Bruce, yesterday. Coach Heiss, Southeastern, and I were talking about how the JV Girls League is so much better this year. And as we got to talking, it makes sense because the varsity league's getting older.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kids that maybe were rushed along in years past are now at the more proper JV level and getting that the development and so forth. And as a result, I think the JV basketball, the level of play has just been better, quite frankly.
I also like on your 1,000-point club, I look at that occasionally, and I like how you've got it broken out by school as well. So if I want to know who Huntington's top scorer was, it's right there, and he's obviously in the list as well.
And I would love to get feedback on that, because some people don't like how I've included the Frankfurt, Clarksburg, Edina, or the Kingston's, whatever schools in there, Twin, Paint Valley. So, I'll open to different things there, and that would be more of an off-season project. But maybe somewhere down the line that John and I could work on that, or get some help from different people at different schools, and maybe clean that up just a little bit.
Sure. Well, that implies that they would have to contact you, Shane. And gosh, we're at the contact information. So here's how you would contact if you'd like to provide some comments about what you do and don't like about the website, what you'd like to see added, that kind of thing. We're open to suggestions about the website or about the podcast. So if you'd like to contact Shane, you may do so at through his email, admin1@svcsportzone.com. On Twitter, his handle is SVC Sports Zone. On Facebook, he maintains the two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and svcsportzone.com. Mr. Bruce, you can email him at jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, of course, everybody say it together now. Handle is Coconut Wall Papa. By the way, when they tweet about any SVC-type topics on Twitter, they're going to use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk, so you can just search on that. Others of us use that as well from time to time. It's a good way to tell what's going on in the SVC. If you'd like to leave a message through voicemail, you may do so by calling 740-569-3254. That's a DBK Media Services website. And you just leave the message there, and we'll forward it along. As always, we request that you share our information on Facebook, retweet it on Twitter, or favorite it, like it, whatever you want to do with respect to that. You can even laugh at it now on Facebook, so you can do all kinds of responses there. If you're listening on iTunes, how about a rating and a great review? That would be wonderful. So, guys, I think we did pretty well for the first time back. I think we've been immersed in SVC since 2 weeks ago when we were last with everybody, but we're just kind of getting a chance to talk about it today. Interesting program. I enjoyed it. So what did we miss? Anything?
John, go ahead. If you have something in your notes there, I had one thing on the boys and girls side, and I'll close this out.
No, I'm pretty good. I think we covered really everything I wanted to cover.
Okay. Well, just looking at my notes, the only thing I didn't mention on the girls side, John actually touched on the overall record of the girls league and how it was really starting to improve. Mm-hmm. And I thought the one thing that needed to be said was the fact that the girls league, even in those losses, have lost to some really good basketball teams. Edina, this particular holiday break, people kind of were surprised at some of those scores. Well, Eastern Brown and McLean, good basketball team. Southeastern has played, Peebles and Dawson Bryant and Trimble. I mean, it's been, really, really impressive schedule there. Lynchburg Clay, Olin Tangi, Bishop Reedy, Fitton County's not bad. Ironton. So as I go down through there and I start to look at those 13 losses, you start to say that, there hasn't been too many losses. I mean, Paint Valley forfeited a game against Hillsborough there late, but like other than that, it's been pretty legitimate. So I think that's good sign for the girls league, because remember, that's something we were really going to keep our eye on, John, throughout the year there. And then on the boys' side, I just want to see if they can't get healthy here. We're getting back into school, or some schools are going to wait a week or two or whatnot. I just feel like there's been two or three boys teams that just can't quite catch a break. Like, I think the Southeastern team is pretty talented if they just can get in the gym and get in some rhythm. Python played their two best basketball games of the year and then didn't get to play this weekend. So I just want to see, Paint Valley's going through it right now. They're going through a real hard time. I want to see if the boys maybe can't get a little bit healthier and maybe hit a second win here down the stretch as we get going in the tournament. So, you know, guys, that'll be some things I pay attention to moving forward. I know we're a little long tonight, but it's good to be back in the studio. Look forward to coming up on 300 here in a couple weeks. I don't know if the COVID's going to allow us to do some of the things we plan, but man, what an incredible ride on SVC Sports Talk, and we'll continue to do it because I think it's something that that really serves our league and our kids and our programs well. So, guys, on that note, we'll get out of here. Make sure you're checking out the website. You know, I'll do my best to always keep it 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com. Join us next time for SVC Sports Talk and visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.